Acamella. It is time for Out of Order on this Monday. Finally, thanks for hanging in with us, Eric.
How are you?
What I've learned over 25 years of practicing law is you can blame me all you want, just pay your damn bills.
That's right. You can call me whatever you want, but you know what? I am billing by the hour, and 1 minute over is another hour. That's all that matters. That's good.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to have a chance to speak to the commissioner later today at the start
of
the pregame
show. Nice. I was wondering who would at TSN when I heard the news.
So there you go. And I'm just going to – you and I have been talking about many of these issues, so I think it's worth bringing up again here. I think maybe one of the things, time permitting, if we can get to it, I'd love to get the commissioner's take on and what he's willing to share about the future of regional sports and that model. As we continue to wait, we know what's happened with Bally. We know what it seems to be happening with AT&T as well, and that's a lot of regional sports, and there's other sports affected, but we'll stick to hockey here. And then you can get into revenue, Eric, and where the cap is going or where it's not going. What do you think the future is for the regional sports model on TV in the States?
That's, you know, that is, I guess, the most significant question that is facing three of the four sports leagues, the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball. And ultimately, if the regional sports network cannot continue to offer sports programming as they have, and that is a possibility, then leagues will, in all likelihood, have to do what Major League Baseball has indicated that they are likely to do, and that is take over the broadcasts themselves. The commissioner of Major League Baseball, Bob Manfred, has said, look, we have a really healthy balance sheet. This is something that we can do. And to make these games available to the end user via whatever application, for probably MLB at bat, which is what they would likely use, and you would find that on your, you know, on your TV, Apple TV, whatever it is, and go over the top and watch the games directly through Major League Baseball. The issue there is, you know, you need to allocate a brand new team to monetize and sell advertising for those broadcasts, because now that's how you're going to be generating revenue, because you can't sell rights fees to yourself, obviously. So it does become a little bit of a challenge, but I don't know if it's something that they're completely unprepared for. This is something that they have likely contemplated for some time in light of what was happening, not only with Bally, but just with cable cutting and cord cutters and cord nevers seeing cable subscriptions year after year decline and decline substantially. Such a material change that they had to really prepare themselves for a different way to offer up these services. So it's not a death blow, Steve. What it requires is just a massive adjustment and recalibration.
Do you not feel like, Eric, that all this has done is kind of hastened the transition that inevitably was going to come their way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they saw this as inevitable, and how could you not? I think since 2019, you've had 40 million U.S. subscribers cut the cord, and then 31 million since 2019 are cord nevers. They never had traditional cable. And so those numbers are significant. They're substantial, and they're alarming, or would have been alarming, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. But I've talked about this on Offside for the entire tenure of that show, which is over, you know, 11 years now. In year one, talked about cord cutters and cord nevers as at one point in time is going to force the leagues to shift. Now, the leagues don't include the NFL because a lot of their deals are national media deals, as well as their content is readily accessible and it is paid for, and there are no issues there. It's the other three sports, right? I think the NBA has got 16 teams on RSNs that are affected. MLB has 14, and the National League has 12. So when you meet with Gary Bettman, Steve, it's a good question to ask, is how do you intend to adjust? What will that adjustment look like if the RSNs go belly up?
And another thing is, and he was, Gary Bettman, he addressed this at the last GM's meetings, which wasn't that long ago, and it was about the cap for next season, saying the cap right now is going up by $1 million for next year, but it could go up at around to $4.5 million more than it is right now if the debt's paid off by the end of the playoffs, which the commissioner then said that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a maybe, Eric. Failing that, though, he said the cap could also go up if they look at escrow again. And basically you're increasing escrow to allow more money into the system for next season, but the players will still have to pay a little bit longer, a little bit more. Would it behoove the players to do that, to get more money into the system? And, you know, the new executive director has only been on the job, what, a week or so. How do you see that situation play it out? Would it be worth the players' while to do that, to take another look at escrow to get more money into the system for next season, or just let it be?
I'd say, hey, Gary, have you told the players that if the cap goes up not by $1 million, but let's say $5 or $6 or $7 million, that they likely won't get paid more? Have you told them that? See, if the cap goes up, fans, I think, benefit because teams have more flexibility. As well, teams will obviously benefit because of that enhanced flexibility. But for the players, and this is so important to remember, is no matter what happens, it's still a 50-50 split of hockey-related revenue. That's it. So over the pandemic, the players were paid a lot. They had escrow in place, 20% in the first year. I think it was 17% in the second year. The last 3 years will be at 10% because the players still owe the owners somewhere between $100 and $150 million or so. Gary Bettman says closer to $100 million. Who knows what that means? But they still owe them that money because it's a 50-50 split. So it doesn't really matter what you could pay. You know, each player $1 billion, but they're still going to owe the league or owe the teams, and by extension the league, money so that the 50-50 revenue split is honored. So is it a good idea for the players? So long as they understand, and of course they will be made to understood and or understand, I'm sure that most of them already do anyway, given them some thought, that a higher cap doesn't mean you'll be paid more, even if your salary is higher, number one. Hmm. Number two, though, is it a good idea? I think it's not a bad idea for the players because it would afford the players more mobility and more in the way of player movement. And I think that's something players would welcome, because if there's a possibility and or threat of more player movement, then perhaps those players could leverage that for a higher contractual value.
Does... And maybe you guys paid a little more attention to this than I did, but does the tenuous situation with the regional networks potentially impact hockey-related revenue? And, in fact, could that make what the salary cap is going to be for next year, the ceiling anyway, and, of course, correspondingly the floor, can that also impact it, or has that been calculated into... The cap might go up $1 million next year because it feels like they're going to take a pretty significant hit on regional rights if indeed those rights go away.
So the reason the cap's going up by $1 million is because of the fallout from the pandemic. And so the league was deprived of such substantial revenue that what they were paying the players wasn't even covered by the 20% escrow.
Right.
So
yep.
That's a huge one. As far as regional sports networks, it's a big deal regionally for those 16 teams or 12 teams that I had mentioned, but insofar as how it affects league-wide revenue, I don't, and I, you know, you'll ask Gary this question, Steve, I think he will likely say that that number is not substantial enough so as to move the needle in a really negative way. The maybe the broader issue is they have these deals, national deals with Disney and TNT and Rogers, which by my math is about close to $1 billion a year. These RSNs going belly up, or belly going belly up, and these regional sports networks potentially disappearing after the season, kind of raises the question, the escalation in media fees that we have seen, is it sustainable? Because this, I guess this next point is pretty important, is that the leagues will shift to streaming more and more, right?
Yeah. Yep.
But the issue is streaming hasn't gained the kind of traction that maybe was expected. So that's a problem. Where are these eyeballs going? If they're not going to sports, they're going elsewhere, and you can't charge as much for those fees. That's the part, I think, that is kind of the is what has created some level of uncertainty with three of the four leagues.
Eric McArmella is joining us for Out of Order, as it is a Sens game day taking on the Panthers. But really, the big, big news of the day is, you know, Gary Bettman is in town. He's meeting with the mayor. He's meeting with the NCC. He's meeting with the Senators. The sale process continues. It's exciting for fans because we feel like we're getting a little closer to a finish line, and that we will know in fairly short order, it seems, relatively speaking, who the preferred group will be and or what that group will look like, and then the sale will happen at some point in the coming months. Interesting, and Chris and I were talking about this on Friday, Eric, that it does seem that, and this makes a lot of sense, this is a real estate deal as much as it is a hockey club deal. To that end, it would seem, and it does appear, though, that the prospective groups, I'm sure the commissioner is saying this to the NCC today as well, how about a little bit more land if it's going to be at LeBreton Flats? Because the one thing we've learned about transactions of this nature, it's kind of like building golf courses. CJ can attest to this. It's not just about the course. It's about what am I doing around the course? This is where I'm going to make my money. So, Eric, would you be surprised at this stage if it's going to be at LeBreton, if there wasn't more land on the table for the, you know, the winning bid?
Well, you know, as a side note, golf courses are really, it's the height of privilege, isn't it? You have these massive, massive pieces of land that are just used so these guys and girls can go on the courses and play golf. It's really fascinating stuff. In order, the purchase of the Sens is a real estate deal. It is then a media deal. And then last, it is a hockey deal. You know, people ask me, Eric, you know, why do you look to buy property? It's because I keep telling them they're not making any more land. They're done making land. So I understand that they would want more land because the key to this deal is real estate. I mean, who are the potential buyers in part? They're real estate companies. That's how this has changed, right? This is not how it was 30 years ago or even 20 years ago. Everything has changed. So the sale of the Sens, from my standpoint, is primarily a real estate.
Yeah, it's over the last number of years in all sports, right? Show me any ownership group, and chances are it's going to be a lot of real estate money or media money.
Show me the land. There's Tom
right?
Cruise.
There's
Show
two
me
things.
The land. Show me the land.
Bruce,
someone can deepfake Bruce, that if you want, I'm sure. Chris can probably deepfake that.
That's Bruce, a rewrite.
Bruce Firestone was a visionary. He was one of the first guys to envision the hockey team being a draw, not the main thing, but just a draw to developing all this right around where we're sitting now. Ultimately, it happened when
this
you
is
look
the
at
light,
everything
where
around
are the
here now. Yeah, exactly. And he didn't get the benefit, but all you have to do is look at Buffalo. What Pegula has done around the area of the rink there with the casino, the hotels, all that stuff that's been developed. And you want to talk about reinvigorating a downtown or a particular area of that downtown, down by the water there where the rink is. All that around there now has been completely redone and draws all kinds of people down there now who can walk out of the rink and go for a beer or go stay in the hotel across the street. And the practice rink, which they use for the NHL combine, Tampa. The job that Vinnick's done down in Tampa in terms of developing all that waterfront property around the rink, there was nothing there when they first went. And now they've created that into an entire community. So you're absolutely right. The hockey team, even if they are valued at $1 billion now, might only be a quarter or a fifth of what winds up being the entire project.
Yeah, and you know, selfishly, I live in Westboro near Champlain Park, and so for me, it's a 5-minute bike ride or about a 30-minute walk to the arena if they ever build it there. And so that would be great. That would be terrific. And I know I don't stand alone there. Is that you have the centralized arena as well, and it just will reinvigorate the entire, you know, that area, which is pretty barren, except for, I think, a library going up. And it seems like a terrific opportunity for the city to do something, kind of Lansdowne on steroids, you know?
And let's not kid anybody here, Eric. You would not be pedaling the bike to the rink. Your butler would be doing that, and you would be sitting on the back.
Not the back. No, I have a sidecar. I have a sidecar.
There you go.
And I'm
with a TV, probably, and bar service.
The butler.
He's
pedals.
Got bottle service in the sidecar.
A TV and bottle service in the sidecar.
There's somebody trailing in another bike. The cup pulls
like
up alongside him.
make it sound like this isn't normal. I don't understand. Like, you're laughing when you say it, but doesn't everybody have more money than they need? I don't really understand what you're saying.
Well, and also 30-minute walk, depending on how the evening goes, that's probably going to turn into a 50-minute.
And
know,
the other thing was,
meander
we
home.
I do have two young kids, so usually, yeah, I remember Daniel, who was nine at the time, he was like four, and we were in Westboro, and we bought him this motorcycle, like a little battery. And so I'm on Carlton, and he took this motorcycle all the way down to Wellington, as far as Parkdale, and then it died. And it was like literally 30 degrees Celsius. Humidity was about 17,000%. And I put him on my shoulders, and I carried this motorcycle with my right hand all the way home.
Oh,
and I remember I removed him from my shoulders, and he goes, "Daddy, you got sweat from your neck on my legs." I'm like, "Really? That was the least of our issues."
That's your go-to right now?
Yes.
Is this what we're talking about?
Dad of the year.
Oh, man.
We made such a big deal out of, oh, Eric McCormella hanging in because we had some technical problems waiting for us to come on.
Yep.
You know that he wasn't on hold. His butler was holding the phone.
That's right.
Waiting to tell him, oh, they're back now.
There we go.
No, he's not. Okay. He actually just holds me in his arms while I do these segments because I do need the emotional support because, as you know, nowadays, personal feelings are really important.
Okay. Well, you hung in there with us. We appreciate it. So we'll cut you loose. Offside each and every week here on TSN 1200, and you join us each and every Monday. And sometimes we take three runs at it when we have technical difficulties, and you hang in there. So don't bill us, please. Give us a freebie, and we'll talk to you again next week.
My butler and I both love you very much.
All right. There's Eric McCormella each and every Monday on Out of Order right here on In the Box on TSN 1200. Joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. Okay.